Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Innovation Calling podcast. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
All right, and Sia, I'm going to let you introduce our guest today.
I am super, super excited. Today we've got Frank Mong. He is a massively accomplished thought leader here in the Bay Area. And he's built up his illustrious career with, you know, folks like some heavy hitters like Symantec, Trend Micro, HP Security, Palo Alto Networks, and most recently Helium, where he's now the COO. And the reason why we want to have him on board here is because he's going to help us understand, you know, what we're talking about when we're talking about some of these buzzwords that we've been really throwing around, like, you know, IoT, you know, cybersecurity, blockchain, all that good stuff. But he's here to actually help us answer questions regarding the future of securing mobile devices and, you know, where that's going to be driving us and changing and evolving, you know, what we think of connectivity today. So without further ado, Mr. Frank Mong, welcome to Innovation Calling Podcast.
Hey, thank you, Sia. Hello, Aaron. It's great to be here. It's an honor to be with you guys. I love what you're doing. So thank you for having me. I'm super honored to be here.
Well, you know, it's amazing what you can do when you bribe people. But I think you're actually coming here to join us for good purposes, which is very helpful for us. So thank you.
My pleasure.
So, you know, I kind of want to get started off here. When I initially reached out to you, I knew you obviously for many years, but I also knew you from HP Security and your time there, right? VP, General Manager, and I worked at HP at that time. For the full disclosure for everybody on the podcast, I cannot help but think that you have been in so many different positions. You've talked your way through a lot of things, and you're very knowledgeable. Don't get me wrong; you're very charming. But I have to start off and kick off with this one event at HP that I still brag about to this day. All right. So I know you're laughing at me right now, but let me just go ahead and, you know, be like your mother for a second here. Is you pulled off a massive coup. Okay. When at your time at HP, you were able at the HP security event to get General Keith Alexander, the former director of NSA, and the journalist Glenn Greenwald onto the stage and hosted a panel fireside chat, if you will. And if I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong, you did it in a way where they were very professional. They asked some tough questions. How the hell did you pull that off?
Yeah, this was a few years back, and this was for HP Protect, which is an ArcSight user conference, essentially. One of the things we wanted to talk about at the time was privacy and the ability to protect your data. And I think what drove that conversation around General Keith Alexander and the journalist Glenn Greenwald was that if the data isn't safe at the NSA, then where is it safe, right? It's sort of the conversation. And I think leading up to that event, we had the Sony hack of the movie The Interview, where the nation state, you know, allegedly North Korea's cybersecurity or cyber capabilities did an offensive and was able to break into Sony and steal the movie and sort of launch it into the public, or force Sony's hand into launching the movie into the public. And so that breach at Sony, I think, sparked an idea. And the idea was, hey, let's talk about, you know, privacy to the world and the importance of data privacy in this case. And what better way to do that than actually have, you know, sort of one of the biggest breaches of our time, right? With the leaks from the NSA, and get the journalist that broke that story and released the data, Glenn Greenwald, and the head of the NSA at the time, General Keith Alexander, to come together and talk. What was really cool and interesting about that panel wasn't actually, I think, what happened on stage, because that I try to structure the conversation as much as possible to be balanced so that both points of view, both the protector of data, the NSA, and the desire to make things transparent, which is the journalist's job there, I try to make it balanced for both. So I think both sides have valid points. And both sides also have, I think, valid concerns and flaws. that's sort of the structure I was trying to create. What was interesting is leading up to that panel, backstage in the green room, you know, neither General Alexander and Glenn Greenwald had ever talked or met leading up to that. So before going on stage, they did not even sit with each other. They didn't talk with each other. They would not prepare for this with each other. I had to do everything separate. So we had two separate green rooms, two separate preparations. And then when we came on stage, that was the first time that the general and Glenn Greenwald actually met and talked. First time. They never actually talked before that. So that whole thing was really exciting for me. I mean, I have to admit, I was super nervous. And I have to give credit to General Alexander in this case. The guy is just super aware, great situational awareness, of course, right? He's the leader of the NSA. And he asked me before going on stage, hey Frank, are you nervous? I'm like, yes, I am. Is this a show? He's like, why are you nervous? You have nothing to be nervous about. And I said, well, I'm guessing you do hundreds of these types of things, so you're not nervous. He says, well, I'm not nervous, but it's not because I do hundreds of these things. He says, I'm not nervous because when he was a field general during the war in Iraq, he had to go into the front lines, you know, like in the war. He went into the front lines before the U.S. military entered Iraq. He was going into the front lines. He and I guess some kind of five-star general at the time got into a helicopter. And the helicopter flew Keith Alexander and the four or five-star general with him. And they went into the front lines, but the helicopter actually flew too far. They went too far into Iraqi territory, and it came under fire. So the helicopter was under fire. The troops were way behind this helicopter. So the general was way too far into enemy territory.
Did they come protect him?
Yeah, the helicopters, you know, there was like mortar firing at the helicopter, you know, RPGs flying at this thing. So the pilot had to do basic maneuvers and land the helicopter in enemy territory. This is off script. This was not planned. And so as soon as they landed, the five-star general started running away from the helicopter because the Iraqi forces were targeting in on that thing. Yeah, so he was trying to get out of there. And as he was running, General Alexander looked down on the ground. They landed in the middle of a minefield full of mines. And the helicopter is super loud. The whole thing, the General Alexander had to run after his superior, grab him by the shoulder because the guy couldn't hear him, grab him by the shoulder, get him to turn around, and he pointed downward. Look at the ground. Look at where you are standing. They looked down. He realized, oh my goodness, I'm running in the middle of a minefield. Like that was when General Keith Alexander was nervous. That's the only time he's been nervous. So ever since that event, General Keith Alexander has never been nervous in his life, because that was probably the most, you know, thrilling, exciting, scary things ever happened to him.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, that's a true life and death situation, whereas going on stage and talking to a few thousand people is just, in the grand scheme of things, I could see where being, I'm just talking to a bunch of people, can't see their faces. I could see where he's going to put things in perspective for you.
Totally. So that completely calmed me down. After he told me that story, I was like, oh, this is nothing. I can't even compare to that. What happened? I have nothing to worry about.
You know what you should have said was, well, surprise, General Alexander, we actually have some guys with guns on stage here. So if we don't like what you say, we're just going to start target shooting you.
That only happens in Texas.
Yeah.
No, it definitely puts things in perspective, right? Like of what really could happen in life and what happens to other people. Oh, yeah. And interesting. Well, it's a great story.
And on that note, though, I mean, if you think about with what that story represents, right, in the grander scheme of things, and quite frankly, his job with the NSA, it is about our security, right, and our data. You know, only they know, right, what they have on all of us. And it kind of, you know, again, security will always be an on-running theme in every conversation we have in this day and age. As long as we've got the whole digital world and we're shifting, you know, our technologies really around monetization of our data versus, you know, what I think we in IT traditionally kind of went after about monetizing our, you know, business, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is where, with your background, again, so heavy in security, when you shifted and moved over to Helium, you know, I really wanted to understand for you, you know, why would you do this jump? Because I mean, you've worked at large, you went from small at SonicWall all the way to large, and that's got to have give you a different perspective of things, right? So
totally.
Well, before we get into that, I was going to say, before we get into that story, do we want to really quick give the rundown of Helium? And then
I think so. I think it's a good transition, actually, because I think that's a good question of, hey, why Helium now? Or having gone through big companies, you know, I actually started a small startup way back in the day before SonicWall at Ignite with the gang there and my best friend, Sean Burke. That time was very different 20 some odd years ago. Then I go into these bigger companies, HP certainly a very big company. But, you know, I think the experience with Keith Alexander and Glenn Greenwald, the conversation around data, data privacy, data transparency, that actually did spark something in me that said, hey, look, there's something here. There's a problem with the world. Not just that the data is secure or not secure, but I think the bigger question is who's got control of that data? And if you think about it, it's completely centralized. It's a centralized government, centralized system. The internet's become very centralized. Only a few control the data that's on the internet today, whether it be a Facebook, Google, you know, some other big guys like Twitter and so forth. You got to ask yourself, you know, why is that data centralized and why is that only available to a few? Why isn't it distributed? Why isn't it decentralized? Why doesn't, you know, Sia or Aaron or Frank control their own data of who they are? And that, I think that question sort of been, that seed was planted in me in that conversation. And I kind of, you know, frustrated me and continue to ask that question through, you know, through beyond HP, certainly at Palo Alto Networks, as I continued down the cybersecurity path. Then I met a company called Helium. And what I really loved about Helium was two things. One, it actually does address the question of centralization and data and where data goes from an IoT perspective. And two, Helium's a small early stage startup. The company was founded in 2013 by two unlikely characters, if you will, in the space of IoT. Sean Fanning, who we all know is a Napster guy. He was sort of the inventor of peer-to-peer networking, right? We all downloaded music. If you're my age, you know that you got free music. Thank you to Napster and thank you to Sean. And so Sean got together with a guy named Amir Haleem, who's the co-founder of this company. And Amir, you know, his claim to fame is he was champion of Quake way back in the day. And his handle was Hakeem, right? And so this guy is an esports guy, essentially. Built two companies and gaming companies and sold it to EA Sports. So you've got a video game guy and you've got a peer-to-peer guy coming together to start an IoT startup. Well, why would they do that? And that this is where it gets really interesting. They back in 2013, they found that, you know, software was super easy to develop. Software had toolkits. You could essentially put together applications very quickly, very easily, because there are massive communities with massive tools, reusable code that anyone can use, anyone can build. And so it really lowered the barrier for anyone to build applications. That same concept was not true for hardware. And this is a key point, because IoT has a big component, which is hardware. It's not all just software and outcomes and benefits and value props. It's actually, to get to the value prop, to get to the benefits, you've got to build the hardware first. And that hardware was really difficult. There's no, you know, secret toolkit. There's no magic. It was very difficult. It's hard to deal with hardware. And so Sean and Amir said, we got to fix this. We can do something about this. And they actually tried. They tried to build hardware. They tried to build end-to-end solutions for IoT. And like the industry, they failed. They actually experienced some failures, right? You've got big names behind the company, Mark Benioff's, you know, SV Angels. You got First Mark Ventures, Vinod Khosla, and you've got Google Ventures backing this company. And they failed. They failed to actually figure out what to do in IoT. Not only did Helium fail, but the rest of the IoT industry has failed. Building and connecting the IoT products was a mess. It was a complete mess. Very hard, lots of protocols, super fragmented. And when it came down to it, it was too expensive for little machines to connect everywhere. Because when the little machine is not in your home or your office where it can use Wi-Fi or use Bluetooth for your phone, the only other way they could connect is on cellular. And when you start touching cellular environments, not only is it difficult to build hardware for that, it's expensive. You got to actually pay a cellular company to get access. And here's sort of the analogy that kind of I really connected with me to data. While data is owned by the few, so is connectivity. Cellular is only owned by a few. You can name them, right? AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint. They own it. They own connectivity. So if you're not in your house, the only way you can connect to the world is you got to use one of these people, one of these conglomerates, one of these telcos. You have no choices. So for you and I, you know, we can do that. We'll pay the $40 a month, $140 a month, so that we can have access to YouTube and Netflix and listen to podcasts everywhere, right?
Right.
But when you think about a little sensor, a little machine, where their job is to send back, you know, air quality information, send back, you know, tracking location, why would you pay $40 a month for that? You can't.
Right.
It doesn't. It's just not feasible. It doesn't make any sense. And so there is a gap here, and this is why Helium has sort of, you know, gone back to its roots and said, look, we've tried and tested lots of ways to approach this IoT situation. The fundamental problem is the network is too difficult, whether it's a battery problem, a range problem, or cost. It's just too hard. There's no plug and play for IoT. So let's go build that. And this is why I was attracted to it, because the method in which they decided to go build this is super interesting. And I think it's been the missing link for IoT, which is blockchain. And this is where that conversation of, hey, there's IoT here, the plug and play aspect, there's an aspect of blockchain here that's crucial. And when you combine the two, you essentially are able to create something that the world hasn't heard before, which is a decentralized machine network, a dedicated network for machines, and a network that's plug and play, a network where it's not built by AT&T or Verizon or Sprint. It's actually built by us. It's built by you, built by me. We become the network. And if you take that a step further, it means that Aaron, Sia, Frank, and anyone listening, you become a network provider, a provider of connectivity for any machine that wants to connect.
Hey,
and
Frank.
And that concept there isn't, yeah.
I apologize. Can you go back 30 seconds? I just lost you and you froze.
Okay.
And your voice went out. So let's take it back real quick here. Is thanks Wi-Fi. There you go, connectivity.
Yeah.
So what if I can kind of just take a step back here and just better understand and highlight what you're saying with a decentralized machine network.
Sure.
Okay? If I understand you correctly, are you saying that by leveraging a peer network that is not necessarily reliant on that 4G connectivity, maybe it's my broadband that I've here at my house, Aaron in her office, you in your office, and at your house, you are saying that the sensors here now have an alternative route to transmit that data and quite frankly, bypass the existing bottleneck of a carrier to provide that service. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
Yeah, think of it this way. When you're not in your house, you're not in your office, and you have a particular application, like you're tracking your dog. You want to walk your dog. Your dog doesn't need to be on a leash, and you want the dog to be able to run around anywhere that the dog wants to go. You want to make sure that dog is able to run freely, and you can track that dog. Well, there's no technology today that lets you do that, I think, in a real seamless way. You without line of sight to your dog, if your dog gets too far from you, you're going to lose track of that animal, right? And so what Helium is doing essentially is building a sensor, a radio network that can attach to a dog collar. And if everyone helps us build a network and puts a gateway in their home, we're going to be able to track that dog within a 6-mile radius of the closest network. And so that's not using cellular, that's not using Wi-Fi, that's using what we called RF, right? Radio frequency, 900 megahertz, which is everywhere around us, essentially. But it's leveraging that existing radio frequency to connect that dog now back to you. And the application there of tracking your dog without the need of a cell phone, without the need of Wi-Fi or cellular, has a lot of benefits, right? Because you could now essentially track anything that's of value to you, which is a very small form factor, and the battery life can last for years. And it becomes a super practical use that I don't think we've cracked, you know, we've been able to sort of crack that nut on. And so when I say decentralized machine network, it's really implying, you know, connecting any device or anything like a dog collar to you, back to you or to your cloud or to your enterprise, and to do it in a very cost-effective way so that the benefits to you are you get to, you know, always know where your loved one is or your pet, you know, is, or where your most valuable item is.
Right. So, I mean, that's one use case. And I you know, yeah. Let's be honest, there's going to be a certain segment of the population that probably just got turned off because they're not dog people. I don't understand who they are, but apparently they exist.
Yeah. They exist.
I mean, I could see other use cases for this. And I think, again, I keep harping on, you said earlier that IoT has failed, right?
Yeah.
And I can tell you there's dozens and hundreds of other companies that are saying, oh my God, Frank, what are you saying?
Sure.
But in my experience of what I've seen, in a enterprise environment, right? So if you're thinking about logistics, sure. You know, whether you're a healthcare or a life sciences company where you're shipping medicine, mm-hmm. and you need to know where that shipment is, if it's maintained, that's right. The correct temperatures, I can understand that use case. It just seems to me they would be the earlier adopters of this mm-hmm. type of technology. So with what you're saying with Helium, it doesn't matter what industry. You're just saying, here's how we can do it. Here's an alternative path, and it will be more cost effective. Is that correct, or is it?
Yeah.
Are these your sensors specific to enterprise versus, you know?
Yeah.
Small medium businesses requirements. I guess help me understand that.
It's a great question because to succeed here in building the network, it's not Helium building the network. Right? I think you're hitting on a really good point here, which is, we're trying to enable a two-sided marketplace where you, the individual, the community around us, we are the network owners. SIA owns a network. I own a network. And that's one side of the marketplace, right? We become network providers. This is where the decentralized network happens. On the other side of the marketplace is the applications. It's the enterprises. It's people that have particular use cases, whether it be you talked about medicine, whether it be at pharmaceuticals, right? Imagine we're working with a large pharmaceutical company called, we'll just call them Pharma X. Pharma X today manufactures cancer medicine. And they actually ship probably close to 100,000 cancer vials, both in liquid powder form around the world. And the way it works today is they track the medicine within their manufacturing supply chain using RFID or barcode. As soon as it leaves its facilities and starts to go to the edge, to the doctors, to the clinics, to the patient, they actually lose sight of it. It's no longer trackable by Pharma X. And so Pharma X is concerned about that because what happens is when the medicine arrives in a doctor's office or a clinic or the patient, sometimes it's not at the right temperature. It's gotten too hot, too cold, or it's been shaken too much. And the impact of that is that the medicine is less effective. It's not going to be optimal for treatment. And so then you have a loss there. Not just a loss because the medicine cost is lost, but it's the patient loses because now the patient's going to get less effective medicine, or the patient can't use it and has to wait for the new batch of medicine to come. Right? That's, I think, impacts sort of like it's life and death, right? It could have saved you. If you had it sooner, or you could have been saved because it would have been more effective. And so Pharma X wants to mitigate that risk so that patients do get the right type of medicine at the right time in the right temperature. And so what we've been able to do with our network is essentially create a sensor on the cap of that medicine vial. where we can track temperature. We can track whether or not the medicine's been shaken too much. And all that's reported back to Pharma X. And so Pharma X can determine throughout the entire supply chain where that medicine is, how it's been treated, and when it arrives in a clinic, is it in the refrigerator at the right temperature? And when the seal is broken at that moment, is the formula at its optimal place? Right.
That's absolutely fascinating. I mean,
Well, can I ask something though? Because I've talked to a lot of IoT type companies, and it's the connectivity issue is interesting to me, because like one of them, for example, was a trucking company, and they put IoT devices in these trucks, especially from, like you're saying, being able to monitor. So, or the dog collar is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Like it exists. Like I've seen tracking devices for dogs. So this isn't necessarily new. I want to make sure I understand, because, you know, I'm listening to this going, but wait, I thought this was already out there and working. Yeah. Are you just saying it's just a better technology, or, you know, like I know you'd mentioned where IoT was failing. Is this where basically once we lose, once we're in the traveling situations or we get out of a wireless situation, we could potentially lose that data, and that's where it's failing. So is that where Helium just is a better solution for what's out there?
I think you bring up a really good question. The question of, is this a better solution? It's actually very, a different solution, not just better. Because in the case of the dog collar, for example, if that was a thing and it was working correctly, every dog would have it. But that's not the case. Not every dog has it. And the main reason why is because the dog collar solutions you see today are operating on either GPS and cellular, or a combination of both. And the problem with both is power. A dog collar is only a certain size, and it can only carry a certain size battery. And GPS and cellular are extremely power hungry. So it draws a lot of power. So the dog collar is only going to work for a few days before you have to charge it. Just like you've got to charge your cell phone or your Apple Watch, right? Pretty much every day. And the practicality of doing that, you know what? At the end of the day, is just not practical. And it's not accessible for everyone, because that's an expensive dog collar now, right? It's like a cell phone. It's going to cost you a few hundred dollars. That's not fair in a way. It's just not a level playing field. And so what we're proposing is, and I haven't even gotten, by the way, to the point that if you use cellular, you got to pay for a cell plan to connect that dog collar. It's not just free. And so what we're proposing is that if we can build a network and all of our neighbors, and we're able to plug in a gateway that is offering essentially very low cost, near free RF connectivity, that dog collar is not using cellular, it's not using GPS, it's using this Helium radio, and that Helium radio with the gateway is going to connect that dog collar, right? One, all the time, because it's radio frequency now. And it's going to do it at a very low battery, because the battery life we're talking about is years, right? The dog collar with a battery pack on a Helium radio could last a year to 2 years. So you don't have to worry about recharging it every day. I think it's probably likely that you'll be willing to charge it every year, okay? And then the cost. Well, guess what, Aaron? You get to charge what the cost would be. Sia gets to charge. And every time that dog passes your house, Sia's house, Frank's house, and it wants to send a signal to its owner, hey, I'm here, I'm at Sia's house now, Sia's gateway gets to charge whatever Sia wants to charge. It's an open market. So Sia can say, you know what, I love dogs, I'm going to charge a fraction of a token, which could be the equivalent to a fraction of a penny in US dollars, right? Whatever Sia decides. And the dog collar owner can say, oh, I'll pay that. I'll pay a fraction of a penny any day to be able to find my dog. That's nothing, right? And so now it's a whole different game. Now it's not AT&T making money on this value prop. It's Sia, it's Aaron, it's you, it's Frank, it's anyone else that wants to participate. Does that make sense? So you're solving a problem of tracking the dog, but you're doing it in a way where you're creating a level playing field. You're creating this new economy where everyone can make passive income on this, right? If they want to be a network provider.
So, okay. So let me understand a little bit more. So it's interesting to me, because how many people, though, do you need buy-in for this? So you need the dog collar manufacturers, and then all of the neighborhood, essentially, just to say, you know, or everyone, because what happens if my dog goes to Sia's house and Sia has no tracking, right? Does that mean I can't find my dog, like that my dog is lost during that point? Or like, I'm just like, I'm looking at the marketing and the getting the buy-in on a product this, like how many people are required?
Yeah, it's a two-sided marketplace, right? So we have to get people to buy the gateway, to put it in their house. The incentive there is built in because of the blockchain, right? Every time the gateway is turned on and it's proving its location in a consensus algorithm, this is sort of, we're getting to how blockchain works now. Blockchains work by building blocks in a chain. Our consensus algorithm is called proof of coverage. And so gateways around the world are going to prove to each other that they exist. This is not like a virtual machine, or it's not a fake gateway sitting in AWS. It's a real physical network that's offered at Sia's house, Aaron's house, Frank's house. And we'll constantly check each other every 60 seconds. And every time you prove you're real, you're building a block. You're storing your location and time. That's important because that's what allows us to figure out where your dog is at the end of the day. And how many of these gateways do you need, right? So if you're living in Texas and you know, you've got a dog running around, every gateway can hear a radio sensor within 6 miles. That's 6 miles with buildings and trees. If you're in the plains or desert in Texas, that range could be 30 miles, right? So because it's radio frequency, it depends. But I would say, you know, 6 mile radius means that your neighborhood could have one gateway, and that could be enough to help you keep track of where your dog is. The more density we have, the more accurate the tracking becomes. So do we want lots of people to buy this? Yes, we want lots of people to buy in on this. And once they buy a gateway, they own the gateway. It's they are the network provider now. Helium doesn't own it. They own it. They set the price. And the more gateways you have, the more competitive the network's going to become, right? It's going to get lower and lower in cost. And so ideally, everyone buys in on this. So the incentive, Aaron, for you and for Sia and for Frank, is that we can earn passive income here. We can earn tokens, right, passively, without having to do anything, just other than plugging our gateway in. That's one side of the marketplace. The other side of the marketplace is what you described. It's the manufacturers of the application. It's the dog collar. It's the trucking industry, right? And the truckers building this into their rigs and their trucks and so forth. And there are companies that specialize in that area, building those sensors. And our value prop to them would be, hey, instead of just using cellular and GPS, use a Helium radio, because there are people out there with gateways providing network coverage. And if you use our radio, your value proposition is low power and it's much lower cost overall. And so that way you have an offering for your trucks that can find itself, or you can find these trucks using this alternative path that we call Helium, the Helium network. And so, yes, so our job as Helium is to go and build this two-sided marketplace. And so on the one hand, we're going to sell gateways to individuals who are interested. And on the other hand, we're going to sell this technology. I shouldn't say sell. We're going to open source all of this, by the way. And so the open source aspect of this makes it very easy for other sensor makers, trucking, healthcare, pharma, to adopt our technology, because they can go and build on this. They can, you know, ask us to help them build on it, and we will, so that their application now can use this network, right? So this is where the two-sided marketplace comes in. And so for us to drive the adoption of our technology, which will be open source, the hardware, the software, the firmware, we're creating an alliance that's a nonprofit. It's called the Decentralized Machine Network Alliance. And we've already got like 12 or 13 members now on the alliance, where their interest is to use this technology, to build on top of it, to build the applications so that it can use this network that you and I and Sia can provide. It's complicated. It's not easy. This part of it's not easy. It's very hard to do. But we think that the blockchain is the key, because the blockchain it solves the problem of like the cold start. Why? What's in it for me, right? If you want to think about it, hey, what's in it for Aaron? What's in it for Sia? what's in it for Frank? Some folks may want to do it just because it's decentralized. It's a way for you to take ownership of a network, right? Some people want to do it because, hey, it's good for the community. If we are able to do this, we could track dogs. Hey, we could even track children. You could like create a little tile device and your kids walk into school. You don't want to give your child a cell phone because they don't need one right now. It's not appropriate. Put a little sensor in your child's clothing and you'll always know where your kid is, right? So you don't have to worry about that anymore. That's priceless. Who wouldn't want that, right? Maybe except for your child. Everyone else would want it, right?
But this is really what, like, again, what you just nailed right there, a more community-based use case scenario, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
You're about smart cities all the time.
Yeah.
And those are initiatives that are driven by the carriers, right? Because they know they've got the market for it. I think this is I can see this as a very solid alternative. Is it a flat-out replacement? I don't think I see both of them coinciding. And this is, you know,
yeah.
I think that the appropriate application and use case, yeah, there's carrier base that the enterprises are going to need for various reasons, but sure. I also see where Helium solution really is attractive. I mean, Aaron, I'm thinking about just like, I can see this for private sector, right? I'm sorry, public sector. So like the city of, you know, Dallas, for example, or Frisco or whatever might be interested in maybe using this technology to chase after strays, right? And think Absolutely. How more cost effective it would be, where now not only are the dogs chipped or animals chipped, but now you can actually trace them in real time and know where your, you know, assets are, whatever it might be, whether it's human or, you know, kids on backpacks, right? You know, sensors on that. I can see the application on that. Yeah. So you know where I'm going to go with this, Frank, because I am very
dun, dun, dun.
I'm very sensitive to machine to machine learning, communication, etc. There's two things here, and you know I'm going to say it. What we're doing with IoT, are we kind of pushing ourselves along into that whole, like, you know, robots are going to end up running these, you know, businesses in Skynet, because, you know, I love that word, Skynet.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, with the most recent things going on with Facebook and, you know, all that, how secure is this? I mean, this is corporate data that's getting transferred. Sure. And it's, if I'm using my gateway, I'm opening up my IP. Is traffic going to route through my network? Is it going to be segmented off and like in some kind of DMZ? I mean, those are two big questions. And so I mean, can you give me like the Frank Mong special, because I want to be respectful for your time here.
No. Got it. So funny you bring up Skynet. The name of so Helium's original name in 2013 was Skynet. Helium actually owns that name. So it's funny. The company was called Skynet and the vision was to build a network for machines and allow machines to independently communicate, independently connect, and do its job. Now, there's a negative sort of overtone to that, right? Because you relate that to the movie Terminator and Arnold Schwarzenegger and so forth, and the rise of the machines and the human race. That's not the goal. Our goal as Helium is to create a world of the Jetsons, all right, where machines are independent, they're connecting, but they're doing their job to make our lives better. And I'll give you an example. With blockchain, we could truly make our lives better, not just for the rich and the powerful and the people that have access. I think our goal, especially in the world of municipalities and helping governments and helping communities, is to make the world better for everyone, including the poor, including those that don't have access, right? And what does that mean? You know, if you think about it, smart cities you brought up, smart lighting, very simple. Lights that should be in neighborhoods, lights that should work, not because you're paying your property tax or you're in a rich neighborhood and you're always going to have the best and the lights will turn on for you at night so you feel like you're safe and you can walk outside and enjoy the weather. But that should happen if you're in a poor neighborhood, especially if you're in a neighborhood that needs that. And so when you think about smart lighting, our goal is to make this so affordable, so accessible, so that even in poor neighborhoods, they would have access to safety. They would have smart lighting and they can participate in this economy. They could become a network provider. They can create a passive income for themselves, right? So that they can now, right, sell their data access to machines also. And so I think our goals here, from a perspective of this machine environment, is to help people and not just the rich and the powerful, but actually for those that don't have access. I think we could do that. Now, the second part of your question was what? I forgot.
Security. So security. If I'm gonna be opening up my IP address with a gateway sitting in, you know, my network, right?
Yeah.
Help me understand this gateway. Is it going to be sitting behind my firewall, in front of my firewall? What exactly is going to get transferred? As if I'm that trunking company, I don't want you to know. If I'm definitely that pharmaceutical company, I don't want your data going through Sia's, you know, Joe Schmo network. And a lot of people that are wanting to invest in this, and because blockchain is sexy, they don't have the proper security, you know, firewalls that, you know, obviously the people that are aware will.
Yeah.
Right. Or they'll just get whatever's like included in whatever carrier they provide, right? Some router and that might have like maybe real basic, you know, security features. So help me understand the security aspect. That's, so I think, going
to
be
two parts to this. Yeah. So the I think there's two critical elements to this. One is that this is based on RF technology, radio frequency, which is open. It's open, right? Everywhere. So you can listen and you can hear it. So the key to securing that aspect of it is to have encryption on the radio itself. And so the encryption on the radio, which will encrypt the data at the source, the machine, the sensor, is going to have, it's going to generate data, and that data will be encrypted natively or automatically from our radio all the way back to its destination, which means that the gateway that hears it doesn't actually hear the contents of the data. All it hears is, I need to go back to Sia. Sia owns me. I'm Sia's machine, and Sia's asked me to let her know where I am, right? I'm attached to her dog, you know, Whiskey. And so Whiskey, the dog here, is now over at Aaron's house. Sia wants to know that. So Whiskey's dog collar is going to call home using other people's gateway. The gateways are not going to know what's in the contents of that, you know, that packet. They're going to know that, hey, this is a particular location. At a particular time, there's this information that's encrypted. I'm going to pass it through my gateway, charge Sia some amount of tokens, and then Sia agrees to pay for that, is going to receive that information. And for Sia, you're going to know where your dog is, at what time it was there, and where it's moving to. And you're going to receive that information. It's all encrypted, all right?
Got it.
So that's the first thing, is no one else can see that but Sia. That's one aspect of security. The other aspect of security that may not be as obvious is that the recording of that information of time and location, time and space, is public. It's a public ledger. Blockchain is all about transparency. It's all about being public. And so if you ever want to go and audit, or if you're an enterprise, like the Pharma X company, you need to audit, hey, did this medicine pass through these locations at this time? The answer is go audit that yourself. So if you're an auditor, you're a regulator, you're concerned about compliance for the medicine, it's an open book. There's nowhere to hide. You can see exactly where that cancer med was, what location, at what time, and no one can go and alter that. Because it's a public ledger and it's built on consensus, you can't change it. The truth is going to be built on 51%. 51% of the network says this is the truth. That's the truth. It's built by consensus. For you to go fake that, you would have to go influence 51% of the network, which is very, very hard, near impossible. That's another aspect of security, which is amazing. Because yes, on the one hand, you want to encrypt the data itself, that's your personal data is encrypted, so no one should be able to hear that. On the other hand, when it comes to compliance, auditing, regulation, you gotta show, hey, I did my due diligence, I did everything I could. And that proof is public, you can't change that. So, which is really cool, right? And these are two aspects of security. You know, I think the encryption existed before, but this concept of public transparency, of auditability in the blockchain, that's brand new. And I think super powerful, especially for enterprises.
So okay, so let me take a step roll back. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the dog example. Yeah. So I put a chip on my dog, and I'm assuming the corporation that makes that dog collar.
Yes.
In partnership with Helium. Again, I'm assuming like Helium with OEM, and they can label their collar dog collar finder, whatever you might want to call it. Would it then be that manufacturer's like an additional service revenue stream of saying, so now as part of buying that collar, we're the ones that would if I own that, if I am that dog collar company, I'm the manufacturer, and I put this sensor on, would I then say to the owner, hey, now as part of this product that you purchased, we would be the ones that would determine which gateway we would route out. That way the consumer itself doesn't have to deal with it. It's seamless. Or are you saying now that it, one of the pitches of that collar is you as the owner can pick wherever you want for whatever price point. I guess I'm trying to figure out how this would be applied, because I can see the consumer being lazy and ignorant. And I'm not sure if they would understand to go to the marketplace website there to pick whatever gateway I want to in Frisco or whatever, right?
Got it. Yeah, that's a great question. So in that particular question, the way the way that the manufacturing, the economics would work, and as a result to you, the end user, would be you would buy a dog collar that has this helium radio on it. The manufacturer of that dog collar could either buy the radio from Helium or could make it themselves, because we've open sourced this thing, so they could just make it on their own. On the other end, there is an interface. Imagine like you're, there's a phone app, or there's a cloud, a web browser. We've built that as well. So we have this interface that you can use, the dog collar manufacturer can use, and it's free. They can use it, and they can offer that to you for a fee, or they can offer that to you for free also. It's up to the business of that dog collar manufacturer. But for you as a user, it's as simple as buying a dog collar from like pets.com or something, or Amazon, putting it on your dog, registering the collar on your phone, and you're done. And how much you pay and how that works is, it's up to that manufacturer, right? They can make it super, I hope they make it super seamless for you, where it just works. It just continues to work. And maybe for you, it's a part of sort of the a cost that would be, you know, when you bought the dog collar. Who knows?
So you make that sound super attractive, Aaron. I think we found another business to start.
Yes, you should do that.
Yeah. Super easy. Just add it to the plate.
Yeah, just slap it on there. Not a big deal, you know.
Well, we've got the technology. That's the hard part, right? So that's now all we need to do is just make it all work together.
That's right. Just build your app. That's it.
Yeah, I am inspired, Aaron. We're going to have to talk later about this. So, I mean, this is really exciting, Frank. I mean, what you're proposing to me, again, you know, this is different from just simply creating some kind of technology RFID-based sensor, right? Let's be honest, everyone in this field, in this segment, has some kind of solution on that. If I understand correctly here, Helium is proposing an alternative way to deliver that data from RFID. You guys have created a chip. It's open source, so that way it could be, you know, anyone can either do it on their own, so that company can develop their own, or they can leverage yours, right? You've created a page for the marketplace for blockchain, so that, again, the standard human that's interested in investing in the gateway and be part of that network. That's a barrier of entry, is basically saying, you know, Frank, Aaron, or Sia, or Billy, whatever, barrier of entry is buy this gateway.
Yep.
Right. And then from then on, they can determine the price point. It's almost like, I'm not sure if the company would want me to leverage their brand like this, but it's almost like, the Airbnb of, connectivity, right?
Exactly. Like, you got it. It's just like that. So if you want passive income, right, and you want to earn some kind of token, without having to do much except plugging it in, this would be the way. So exactly like Airbnb, you have an extra room you want to rent out, or you have an extra house you want to rent out, or you want to rent out your house when you're away on vacation. This is the exact same concept. The one difference is this: Helium is no longer in the middle. We're open sourcing all this. So we're not like Airbnb, we're collecting like a percentage of this, right? Airbnb gets like a cut. They charge a fee for connecting you to a renter. We're not charging a fee. We're just letting you use this, because we want this network to grow. We want you and I and others in the community to adopt this new network, which requires you to go buy a gateway, plug it in. That's one side of the marketplace, just like Airbnb. On the other side, like Airbnb, we're going to go find the applications, right? We're going to go find people that want to use your network. And the way to do that is to build build an alliance, give them the technology, hope that they build those dog collars, they build those medicine tracking applications, build those trucking apps. That's the other side. And as soon as these two sides collide, everyone's going to be well off, right? They'll get value out of this.
I want to ask, so because I know we have just a couple minutes left, but really quick. So with the Airbnb example, the downside is I don't want a stranger in my house, right? So that would be that's why I don't want to Airbnb this extra room.
Sure.
I have to go buy a gateway, but what's the other downside? Is there, because right now it seems like, why wouldn't I take advantage? This seems amazing. Am I giving up anything? Am I putting myself out there in a way by saying, jump on this. I need this.
I can't think of a downside. Because there's no harm to you, right? You have to understand radio frequency is something that's just there. It's part of physics. So whether you want to use it or not, it's around you. And so all you're doing is you're plugging in a device that's allowing you to leverage that radio frequency that already exists. It's already around. So I can't think of a downside for someone in doing this. I think if there's anything magical here, that would be what's magical is I think the limitations of our ability to make the world of the Jetsons has been in place because there's only a few people that are controlling that. And they're spoon feeding innovation to all of us. And if we can succeed here by leveraging blockchain in a good way and making it leveraging it in a physical way, if you will, we change the game. Now you are the network, right? You're building the network and you're essentially going to compete with the big guys like AT&T and Comcast. And you're saying, hey, look, I'm no longer going to be beholden to you. Today, this is a network for machines, right? It's not meant to be there for you to watch YouTube, and it doesn't have the bandwidth for that. But someday, if we continue to innovate as a company, we may be able to crack that code and say that, hey, that network you built, Aaron, I know it was only for machines and small little packets of data. Guess what? We found a way. We've created another generation of networks now that you can own. That can let your neighbor watch YouTube and you can charge them for it. That's a game changer, right? And at that point, Comcast, AT&T, T-Mobile, hey, I'm putting you on blast. We're coming, right? This is the future where everyone's going to compete against them. That's the power of the community. That's the power of crowdsource, right? I think that's what makes it super exciting for me.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm like ready to buy my
game. Yeah, when I first heard about your company, I was super excited. I was like, oh, well, sign me up. But full disclosure, I have not bought any, just full disclosure yet.
So you can't buy any yet, right? So we're doing a pre-sale of the gateway that's coming up. That'll probably be in the June, July timeframe. The GA of this new technology with the blockchain is going to be available in September. You can come to our website today, which is helium.com, and you can buy our current generation technology. We're working with large enterprises. We're selling our technology. Big names are using us today. Very soon you're going to hear a lot more about us. And so keep checking the website, helium.com. We'll have lots of great news ahead of us. The good thing is you're not dealing with some kind of weird, shady company. We actually have been around and we're backed by, I think, very relevant venture capitalists in Silicon Valley. And, you know, we're doing this for a good reason, for a good cause. And, you know, we have proof. We got companies using this today, and it's only going to get better. So thanks guys for the opportunity to talk about this.
No, Frank, I can't tell you, thank you so much for your time on this. This is, you are at a really exciting company. I can see why you go from a, let's be honest, comfort level at a major corporation into something that is not guaranteed, but I think there's something here. And I wish you guys absolute best of luck. So Helium, helium.com or heliuminc.com, right?
No, just helium.com.
Helium.com. And as you say, pre-orders are going to go live in June, which is coming up very quickly. Deliverable looks like in September. If there's any questions, I'm sure that you can reach you and your sales team.
Yeah, absolutely. Just come to the website.
Excellent. So Aaron,
put it on our notes page too. No, I was just going to mention, we'll put the website link, all of that on our notes page, and it'll be on at innovationcalling.com.
Great. Awesome. So I think this about concludes another wonderful session with Helium and Frank Mong, the Chief Operating Officer. And again, thanks everyone for your time. And Frank, as always, thank you.
Thank you.